You're listening to This Rhetorical Life, a podcast dedicated to the practice, pedagogy, and public circulation of rhetoric in our lives. This week's episode is called Locally Grown, Cultivating Value-Rich Writing Programs. I'm your host, Tim Dougherty. The kids be rocking clocks where I'm from. You turn around your cap, you talk over a beat, and dig some sounds booming out of Jeep where I'm from. Writing programs are complex ecosystems rooted in particular institutional soil, populated with a shifting mixture of personalities, pedagogical priorities, literacy goals, and both administrative and public pressures. As writing program administrators, we have to strike a fine balance between the particulars of the local and the disciplinary best practices our field has negotiated in this current national educational climate. To understand the finer points of this balance, we spoke with Linda Adler-Kasner, writing program administrator at University of California, Santa Barbara, and author of The Activist WPA. In her book, Adler-Kasner draws from prophetic pragmatism and her own commitment to the Jewish concept of Tikkun Olam, which means healing the world. It's a way that we consciously shift the frames about writers and about writing toward a more just and humane practice, both within our programs and in the national conversation about literacy education writ large. We began by asking her how she works to enact these values in her own program at UCSB. And then we continue by getting her thoughts on the current national debates around literacy education. And we conclude with a response by T.J. Geiger, a colleague and grad student here at Syracuse University, who calls us to answer those looking for public accountability of professors and writing teachers with robust narratives that describe all the work we do to ensure our students are receiving the best in literacy education. So we asked Linda how her wider ideals and philosophies activate her work as a writing program administrator.
So I think about this a lot, and I think about it in terms of my own process and about identifying it in the program where I work, because it's not just my own values, it has to be the values that everybody in the program shares. So for myself, when I think about the ways that I think about that idea of Tikkun Olam, and just sort of doing right by the world and sort of theories of prophetic pragmatism, but in the program, I mean, I think it's more interesting to do it with a bunch of people. One of the things that I do, that we've done in our writing program here, is actually a lot of work having people sort of write short, little vignette story things about what they really liked about teaching and what they really liked about their classes. And then we use those as the basis from which to identify values that really spoke to people. So we had a big retreat and people brought these vignettes and then they sort of circle or underline words that they thought indicated values that were associated with that work. And then we put those up and then everybody shared, you know, made comments on those on a big sheet of paper. And then from that, we sort of collaboratively developed a set of values that we thought were really important for the program. And then we built out from there. And I think it's really important to do that kind of work because we're always making strategic and tactical trade-offs about things. But there has to, at some level, be a core there. Otherwise, you're just, you know, sort of an empty shell of trade-offs for no particular reason. Like, it has to be something that is at the center that grounds your work.
So it's important to get teachers talking about their values. What happens when folks disagree or come at questions in radically different ways?
I would guess that everybody's invested in language to some extent, right? We all care about it. We're all interested in it. The way that we did that at Eastern, and the way that we worked on that was by working on our curriculum. So we just had, we spent a lot of time, and I mean years and years and years, thinking like, what do we value?
In order to ground this discussion of how departments can begin to think about creating shared values, Linda pointed to Bob Broad's book, What We Really Value. In the book, Broad outlines a methodology he calls dynamic criteria mapping, and Linda explained it in a bit more detail for us here.
So dynamic criteria mapping, or the idea of sitting down with a bunch of texts and saying like, hey, what do we like here? What do we value? that's a fabulous way to develop conversations that then can branch off in 8 million directions. So you can work on developing curriculum, you can work on, you know, shaping your outcomes, you can talk about what your program should be. And it's a wonderful way to get people engaged in that conversation from whatever perspective. Because even when there are disagreements, you know, that's really rich and interesting and fun to talk about. So I never see this stuff as set or stable. There's always something to do and there's always something to explore. And that's very much the pragmatist in me, right? I mean, very much like it's always in motion. And if it's always in motion, then there's never, you know, there has to be some kind of, like, you don't want it to be like always crazy in motion, like, ah, there's no center. But you want to have a center of some core values. And then you want to say, like, what are we going to do next? Where are we? And how do, you know, that gets everybody into the conversation. So I think as long as people are talking, that gets them involved. And that very much actually comes from that interest-based kind of organizing perspective. You know, it's like everybody has interests. You just got to keep them coming back.
Dr. Adler-Kastner speaks to the question of identifying interests that we share, interests that keep stakeholders in conversation. But what does that mean when there's so much discouraging news about education policy in the United States? T.J. Geiger, doctoral student at Syracuse University, responds to the climate of our work in higher education.
Linda Adler-Kastner names many of the problems and possibilities that confront those of us who work in education. One issue she discusses is how those of us in writing and English departments must articulate with each other what constitutes our shared values. Another reality that all of us in higher education must confront is the fact that much of our labor is, for the most part, invisible to the broader public. In spring 2012, as the Conference on College Composition and Communication was in full swing in St. Louis, an opinion piece was published in the Washington Post. David C. Levy, who is with the investment firm Cambridge Investment Group, asked the question on March 23rd, "Do college professors work hard enough?" In short, his answer is basically no. While I could take the time to dissect his argument, which seems written as if from some vantage point so distant from the realities of most higher education faculty and built on wholly unrepresentative examples, I won't do that here. What I will comment on is the brilliance of higher ed laborers who organized the FAST and the FIRST in what I hope will be an ongoing creative response to arguments like those Levy makes. Lise Gallerup, the Inside Higher Ed blogger at College Ready Writing, issued a call on March 27th for a day of higher ed where folks who work in colleges and universities would live blog and tweet a typical day in their work life. She proclaims, "April 2nd, record your day, blog it, share it, promote it, make our voices heard, if only for a day." Promoting the Twitter indexing feature of the hashtag, Scallarup called on Twitter users to mark their posts with the term hashtag Day of Higher Ed. That way, it was possible to collect many of the wide-ranging contributions to this effort. At the end of the day, on April 2nd, at least 460 academics took part, sharing almost 1,500 tweets. I don't want to strike a celebratory note here because these self-reports don't by themselves constitute change. However, the move to make transparent and public the work we do, we academics can't shy away from the task of speaking to the broadest possible audience. It's important for us to talk with each other about our values. It's also critical that we create opportunities to talk publicly about our work and hopefully to change the conversation about higher ed.
This Rhetorical Life is brought to you by graduate students in the Composition and Cultural Rhetoric program at Syracuse University. Executive producers of This Rhetorical Life are Ben Kiebrick and Allison Hitt, with additional production and editing from Carrie Ann Soto, Tamara Isak, and Seth Davis.
There was a big NCTE anniversary session at Four Seasons, and I heard Lyle Christenberry's talk, and I loved her talk because she was talking about how, like, this is not a sort of bellwether moment in education. It's a pretty scary time. But she's like, you know what? Man, it's cyclical. There have been non-bellwether moments before, and there will be non-bellwether moments again. And so you can't get freaked out that, like, right now things aren't all the way we want them to be, because the pendulum will swing.